Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello, Chris Evans here with this week's star-studded edition of the Best of the Breakfast Show podcast with Sky from Virgin Radio. And what a week it was. The one and only Noel Gallagher wowed us with memories of the soon-to-be-released documentary Oasis Nebworth 1996 in your cinemas and the album of the same name. It's a fantastic film. It was a great conversation. The always hilarious Russell Howard is back to discuss the latest series of the Russell Howard Hour on Sky Max, coming back Thursdays. Pop sensation turned wellness wonder Ellie Goulding flicks through the pages of her debut book, Fit to calm, stronger. And the Einstein of nutrition, Dr. Robert Lustig, talks about the evils of sugar with stats and facts from his latest book, Metabolical. All of that and so much more to come now. Dapper Dave, pray tell, who's going to be first?
He writes era-defining songs like they're going out of fashion, and he's been doing it for quite some time. The documentary Oasis Nebworth 1996 is in cinemas later this month, and here to relive that seismic musical moment is the man that's now quite literally Nebworth his weight in gold. It's Noel Gallagher!
All right, Noel!
Hello.
Welcome, welcome. So many questions. What a movie. Before we get into how it came about, let's just cut to the chase here. How did it make you feel?
Quite emotional and proud and nostalgic. Three things that I don't really tend to feel. Looking back at those times of the 90s, and that's kind of summed it all up, really.
You probably remember the whole weekend better than most people that were there.
Yeah, I remember it being a very celebratory atmosphere. I mean, I don't remember the finer nuances of it, but yeah, it was a great weekend. It was our, we didn't know it at the time, but it was our zenith as a band. But the weekend itself, I remember being very celebratory, and why wouldn't it be? And a good way to spend a weekend.
And so the first Oasis gig, was that a couple of years before the first ever gig that was recorded?
So Nebworth is 96, the first ever Oasis gig was, yeah, 94.
Because there's footage of that gig at the beginning of the film.
Is there really?
Yeah.
I didn't watch the beginning.
Yeah. But what's amazing for me was I thought, geez, that was an exponential, rocket-fueled rise to the top, wasn't
it? Yeah, I was talking to somebody last night and we bypassed the theatre circuit. We went from those indie nightclubs straight to arenas and then straight to outdoor gigs. So we never did the Brixtons and the Hammersmith Palais and the Apollos in Manchester.
Which were all fantastic.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And we got very big very, very quickly through word of mouth and old school way, you know what I mean?
What was the first arena gig you did and how did you feel before that?
First arena gig was Sheffield Arena, and it was just before some might say was going to come out, and a couple of months before we were playing a gig in York in like a tiny club, and our promoter Simon Moran after the sound check said, I want you to come and look at this place just 2 miles up the road where we think we're going to put you on when Some Might Say comes out. And I remember walking into Sheffield Arena and bursting out laughing and I was thinking, I mean, are you mad? And he was saying, and I was saying, you're going to set, it's not even in our hometown. I said, are you mad? And he said, oh, we could do quite a few nights. And I was like, wow. And then after that first arena gig, we felt the song seemed to fit arenas better. And then it just snowballed from there. And yeah, within a year and a half, we were doing like the biggest gigs that were ever put on.
Okay, and obviously with that, you know, because that is you know, you are on public show like never before. But the kernel of what you do is, you know, in the bedroom writing the songs or in the studio, and then there's a certain thing about the sort of compartmentalization of that energy, you know, in a tight space like in Sun Studios or wherever, where special things happen. Mm. And when you let that energy out, it's like letting the air out of a balloon. Mm. And so what effect did that have, you know, on the two-way street that is performance and writing and creation?
Well, that's you know, you're kind of writing the songs in your bedroom and then you do them in the rehearsal room and you've got your own little unit and, you know, your band has five fans and you're all in it. And then bit by bit, you know, when Supersonic came out and people started singing the words, we were like, oh, no, people are into it. You know what I mean? People are actually into it.
Yeah, yeah.
And then with every release and every TV performance, it just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And it was a bona fide phenomenon. You know, nobody really knew, nobody really predicted it, and nobody knew where it was going to end. And it was a joyous ride. You know, those were the glory days where every 6 months was twice as mad as the previous six months.
Yeah, yeah.
And was just going crazy. And then I, you know, the same as walking into Sheffield Arena, you know, they took me to Nebworth, you know, and to look at this gig.
Well,
and
there's a bit in the film where he says he turned up in his brown shadow, wasn't it, or something?
Yeah, I've been given a Rolls Royce by creation for Christmas because I'd made them all billionaires. And we're on the way to Southampton to start a tour, and we stopped at Nebworth, and we kind of drove into this nothing, this nothingness. And I was saying, so where's the gig? And they're saying, well, this is it. And I was like, but yeah, but where? And they were saying, no, this is it.
Everywhere.
Yeah. And I was like, where's the stage going to be? And they said, well, the stage is going to be down there in a different county, you know. And I mean, I trusted my promoters and management completely, yeah, yeah, and still do to this day. And I was like, okay, if you think it's going to work, it's going to work. But they were, and then when you see the film, it's a brilliant snapshot of, you know, nobody with phones and tweeting. And
no, let's
and
get into film. That. Let's yeah. get into that. Okay, so when was the idea mooted of the Nebworth gigs? You know, can you recall the first conversation you had, not with the word Nebworth in it, because obviously that was a later decision, because it's like, okay, we're going to have these massive gigs, where are we going to have them? Several options. How did the mega gig conversation come about?
It was just, these were going to be our big summer gigs. We never thought anything of it. We never thought anything. We never thought we'd be sitting here talking about it 25 years later. You know, the band were in a kind of a little bubble, and we were just kind of doing our thing.
Happy bubble? How happy? On a scale of 1 to 10?
Well, I mean, when you see the film, there's no me and Liam are getting on great, and it's they were the best days, which is why the Supersonic documentary focused on that period of it, because the fallout hadn't started to happen then. But we had a complete trust in the people around us, and if they said we're going to do this,
why did you pause then? What were you reflecting on then?
Because it didn't end great. You know, it was a slow death. It was a death by a thousand arguments. You know,
yeah.
But at that time, you know, you see it in the film. There's a great camaraderie between the band and its fans on stage, and I'm glad that it didn't come out at the time. I'm glad it's coming out now. So yeah. All of us have got a little bit more perspective about it.
It's great. I mean, that's very interesting that you say that. You know, all of us, and you pointed at yourself then, all of us have got a bit more perspective about it. Mm. Just speak to that a bit more, if you don't mind.
What I found really fascinating is this, is if you look at the makeup of the crowd, they don't look physically that different than people today, right? The hairstyles are kind of the same, and the clothes are kind of the same, and it's the kind of makeup of a festival crowd. So that's 25 years ago. But if you were to go 25 years back from 1996, it's another planet.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, it's all black and white and greased hair, and everybody dressed like their parents. And I think that youth culture has slowed down a lot now, whereas not, bar the internet, not a great deal has happened in youth culture in the last 25 years.
Can I read an email out?
Yes.
To you that I received from my friend Noel Fitzpatrick, the super vet, last night, because I hope you don't mind this, but I forwarded him the encoded link to the movie, because Noel's a massive fan, yeah. Huge fan, loves his rock and roll, and I think he needed it, right, to be honest. And then so I come into work today, and he says to this email from Noel, he sent me this at 1:15 this morning. I think Oasis at Nebworth was the greatest musical event ever to happen in the UK. I couldn't get a ticket to go at the time, and I listened to a bootleg recorded on a cassette tape by someone I knew who went. I was mesmerised. Did you see any cassette tapes of playing recorded in the audience going on?
I can't say no. Right.
Well, it obviously was happening, thank God. Maybe someone will offer Noel £150 million to get back on stage with his brother, who I think he really, really loves so much that the fine line was crossed in that rarefied creative ether of mad, messed up genius. I think they're brothers who love each other on a level way deeper than whatever emotional pain happened when they said things they probably shouldn't have said. Life is short.
Well, yeah, yeah. I don't know what the point of that is, but yeah, people on the outside looking in, it's difficult for them to explain. I get that. It's difficult for me to explain sometimes, but in terms of the legacy of the band, since we split in 2009, the legacy of the band has got more solid and strong and bigger and wider reaching than it ever did. And, you know, some things are best left crystallised in that moment, I think. And I think if there was to be a gig, something extraordinary, some extraordinary set of circumstances would have had to have happened for us to be walking on stage again. I'm at peace with it all. I love Oasis. It's the proudest achievement of my life. But it's like, once you've done it once, you've done it, you know. And I felt at the time it was a special thing, you know, and you can't keep going back there. And obviously nobody knows what's going to happen in the future. But as I sit here today, a reunion doesn't appeal to me. And as for Liam, he's doing his thing. He's responsible for the legacy being what it is. You know, he's keeping the flame alive and all that, and good for him. And, you know, he's doing massive gigs. He's selling more records than I am, and he's selling more tickets than I am, if you can believe that. So he's doing his thing and I'm doing mine, and we're both pretty happy doing that at the moment. Things are all quiet on the Western Front, Twitter. So long may that continue, and good morning if you're listening. I know you're listening. I know you're my biggest fan. But yeah, it's all good.
Because we thought, we were playing with it earlier on, right? Just, and this is just, you can ignore all this. You know, if you did something at Never With Again, right? Because you do have Sophia, who reads the news, right? Mm. She's 27, right? Biggest Oasis fan in the world, right? Mm. I think it might be a bit sad if, you know, it's like the Beach Boys, if we all go in our Hawaiian shirts and we're 75 on stage and off stage. That's not going to work. But we said, how about an age limit of 27? The iconic, you know, rock and roll age for so many reasons. You 27 or under to go to the gig, and no mobile phones, nothing, and just... Would that work?
I was talking to someone about... I get asked about reunion a lot, and I say to people, look, Oasis was not, we weren't from that, the digital age. We were the last great band of the analog era.
Well, what about doing Never With Again for three nights or four nights, and but mobile phones not allowed? You get chucked out.
Couldn't do it. I did a gig a couple of years ago in Bethnal Green in York Hall, where there was no phones allowed. You had to put them in a holster,
yeah.
And that.
Yeah.
It was one of the best gigs I ever did, and people don't realise what a difference it makes. But the vastness of people that Oasis could attract would make it impossible.
All right, and what next for you?
I am writing a new record at the moment, so I'm about halfway through, and I spend the rest of the year writing, and then next year I shall record what I've written, and then hopefully soon... gig-wise, life will have turned back to normal, and I'll do a few gigs. And
what's the best thing your career and your life has given you?
The freedom to just, you know, just do whatever it is that you feel like doing. I'd say, and yeah, the freedom just to get up and go and do whatever you want. Yeah, and but I've never taken my talent for granted, so I always work at that every day. I've never taken that for granted. And, yeah, peace of mind and freedom.
Oasis Nebworth 1996 is in your theatres 2 weeks today, and you've got to get to go and see it. Thanks, Noel.
Thank you, mate.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's a globe-trotting stand-up telly genius and all-round good egg. Series 5 of the Russell Howard Hour started last night on Sky Max and did not disappoint. And now, to tell us how it's all put together, is the news hound with his comedic ear to the ground. It's Russell Howard!
Morning, Russell!
Hello, what a lovely intro. Thanks
well,
very much.
You're worth it, because you're worth it, Russell.
How are you? Last time I saw you, I was doing a show in Marlow. piano. It was absolutely joyous.
It was fun. But look, we are so lucky. We're so grateful. We're living every day to the absolute max. We've got this new thing. We're going all stoic, Russell, if you want the honest truth.
Yes.
We're dying with every day. Do you know what I mean by that? So you know, we're not. Death is not something we're moving towards. It's something with the day. You know, we die with each of our days, and we get up the next day as if it's a whole brand new morning and dawning. And that's basically what it is, anyhow.
That's what I love about you. You're like a lovely, smiling Seneca.
We had Noel Gallagher on yesterday talking about this brand new Oasis film, Oasis Nebworth 1996.
Wow.
Now, how old would you have been then, 1996?
I would have been 16 years old. It was the summer of Blur versus Oasis.
It really was
extraordinary. Yeah, I was so wildly into that. I did a media studies project on the battle between Blur and Oasis when I was a kid.
Okay, which camp were you honestly in at the time?
I was in Oasis because I was afraid to be beaten up. If you said you liked Blur, you would have been beaten up. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, no. But I love them both. They're just fantastic. And it's kind of, you know, all their songs now, just, you know, that beautiful thing that music can do where it just instantly transports you back to a place.
Yeah.
They're real kind of memory transporters, a really good song. You know?
They really are. Well, they're time machines, aren't they? They're real life time machines is what they are. Mm. And we talked to Noel about the analogue aspect of the whole event, which is what you're talking about. And the fact that 125,000 people each night, 250,000 people over the weekend, were in the moment, which you sort of can't be anymore.
Yeah. Well, see, that's the magical thing about live performance. Dave Chappelle does this brilliantly, where he basically locks people's phones up. And what's really cool about that, I've been to a few gigs where phones are locked away, and you actually are forced to talk and notice and be in the room, and the gigs are just incredible, because you realise we're just addicted, all of us are. So it's so lovely when you're kind of, you can't touch it, you literally cannot get to the thing. You're kind of there, and it makes the experience even greater. And maybe it's a generational thing. Who knows?
No, well, I think so, but I think it may be a phase that we're passing through. Let's wait and see. And you can only really ever judge or categorise a moment way after it's happened. I mean, that's the whole thing about COVID, isn't it? It's going to be years and years and years before we really know what happened over the last 18 months, 2 years.
Yeah, totally. And to try and put a kind of a small glimmer of positivity on it, I think what might have happened during this 18 months, there'll be so many kind of young bands and kind of young directors and comedians and artists and creatives who've been kind of locked away for 18 months. And I would be amazed if there isn't this kind of stellar kind of bombardment of creative brilliance that hits the world in the next 18 months. So there could be this odd kind of glory to come from it, because there'll be, do you know what I mean? The new Arctic Monkeys will have been sat in their houses and kind of like chatting over Zoom and becoming brilliant at guitars. And I really kind of feel that, you know?
Well, it's tectonic plates, isn't it? It's pushing up against each other for years and years under the surface, and then suddenly you get an earthquake, and maybe that's what hopefully we're heading towards from a creative point of view.
I love these chats.
And talking about live audiences, you do kick off, I don't know whether it was on the telly or not on the telly, because I've got this amazing studio version of your show, which, by the way, they're the ones I always want from now on, tell your people, when we have a chat on the radio. I love these. Reminds me of working on the telly. I mean, you know, I was very, very, this is not what I was going to talk about, but I was so impressed about how tight you know your show. And, you know, that may sound quite base to most people, but that doesn't happen very often in telly. There weren't many retakes, Russell. Congratulations, young man.
Yeah, well, it's because I write the show myself and I write it with my pals. Yeah. And so I kind of, it's a bit like a live stand-up show with guests and sketches and kind of clips. So the only thing that's kind of a wee bit sort of wobbly is the interviews, in that you don't really know what's going to happen. But I wouldn't want to sort of preempt them. I wouldn't want to set people up. I'd rather just have it a ramble. Like, we had Katie Piper and we had Ian Sterling. I interviewed one of my heroes, and I'm not allowed to talk about it. He's going to be on the show in a couple of weeks, but it's a comedian of some renown down the years.
Okay, who might that be? I'm thinking Billy Connolly straight away, but
yeah, it's the nation's grandfather. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
See ya.
Excellent.
I'll get in trouble. I'll get in trouble.
You can't get in trouble. You're king of the world. You're Russell Howard, for heaven's sake. Listen, so you were in front of a live audience, for, not alive, but a live audience, as live for a live taping for the first time in ages. Because last, and you opened, you opened the show by talking about the fact that for series four, there was just a load of chairs and people who work on the show were sort of moving the chairs if, to try and make you feel like the chairs were laughing at your gags.
Yeah, that's awesome. Wow, you saw the warm-up.
You
guys
I saw everything.
You saw everything, warts and all. So, yeah, basically, we were lucky enough. We had 400 people in the studio this week.
Yeah.
And some of them wearing masks, some of them not. It was great. They were all together. It was beautiful. But last year, we didn't have anyone in for the last 4 weeks. So, yeah, they put the chairs out. Like, that was going to cheer me up. But it was like, do you know what I mean? I just felt like a vicar with no
congregation.
No crowd, man. Yeah. It was awful.
No and crowd.
Do vicars have crowds? I imagine it.
Congregations. Flocks. Now, I know it does great guns, great business on at 10 o'clock on Thursdays, and we've talked about this before, but I hit 9 o'clock on Fridays. I want the Russell Howard hour or two. The Russell Howard hour or two. What about, you know, what about if you, when you do have longer opening sequences about the news and they may not make it to the next week because they may not be general enough to do that. Why wouldn't you just put the whole of the recording out on YouTube as extra bits and bobs?
Well, I think they do. They put odds and ends out. Yeah.
I just put the whole thing
kind
out.
Of, maybe we should, man. Yeah. Well, this is it. The funny thing about the show, as soon as it's finished on the, we record it on the Tuesday. I'm kind of writing on the Wednesday. So in a sense, we're kind of, you forget it. But you're right, there's probably loads of kind of half-lit fireworks that we can definitely...
No, stop it, Russell. They weren't half-lit. They were fully on, mate. I mean, that was there was nothing at all. See, your standards are so high, which is why you're so good, but ours aren't, right?
That's not true.
Let me tell you. It was all gold. Anyway, it doesn't matter. We don't need to get into a fight about it. I just love what you do. Right, Russell Howard. Russell Howard Hour is back on your telly via Sky Max. First episode last night. Play catch-up tonight on Friday, Saturday, or a Sunday.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
From music to mindfulness, our next guest nails it pretty much every time. Her first book, Fitter, Calmer, Stronger, is out now. So here for a chitter, chatter, natter, is the well-meaning musician that's turned her attention to the well-being. It's the well-nice Ellie Goulding!
All right, Els?
Oh, my God, thank you so much for that lovely intro.
He's very good, isn't he? He's too good for this show, as are you, actually. So we won't keep you. Lovely book, by the way. Well done, Ellie. Fitter, Calmer, Stronger. Has it always been a factor in your life, this mindfulness to your own well-being and therefore usefulness to everybody else?
Oh, my gosh, no, not at all. I talk about that. I talk about how I've got to this point now where I feel like maybe, you know, I've kind of got, I'm kind of getting it right, although having a baby kind of threw everything out. Yeah, everything went a bit weird when I had a baby. But no, I talk about just how I've got to this place and that it's taken me quite a lot of trial and error and experiments and meeting people and doing different things to get here. So I just basically just talk about that.
So the it's all about controlling the controllables. You know, a friend of mine, Ryan Holiday, he says, you know, if it's within my control, I give it 100%. If it's not out of my control, if it's out of my control, I give it 0%. And we often get caught in between the two. But of course, the one thing that we can work on, you know, 24/7 is ourselves, you know, not only, you know, our physical core and our mental core, which you talk about in your book. You know, and it's so useful. And you've, especially in a business like yours, and you talk about this as well, you talk about the fact that, you know, the roller coaster of show business, you know, I mean, it's something that we all chose to buy a ticket for. So, you know, nobody's whinging or moaning here, but it is very, very volatile. And you found that you sort of had to get a hold of yourself because it was the only thing that you could really sort of... focus on, and therefore, you know, when you couldn't do almost anything about anything else, what kind of, how did that make you feel? How did it reassure you? Because you talk about anxiety, you know, the anxiety after a hangover, you know, and with that comes the fear, right? And you can have the less sleep you get, especially as a new mum, or the more drinks you've had the night before, or the more sort of, insecure or vulnerable you feel about your career. You know, that's all fear, isn't it? It's a volcano of fear. Yeah. And so was it a bottom you reached, or was it a realisation that you reached?
See, this is why I thought, you know, I'm just going to go ahead and write this book, because it's the themes in it are universal. It's not just about people who decide for some reason to enter the entertainment industry. But when I started out as you did, I'm sure it's like you want to do it because that's what you always wanted to do. And I always wanted to be a songwriter and always wanted to sing music. And I didn't really know. I genuinely didn't know the other things that came with it. I knew that there might be a bit of, like, you know, some photos and some, I don't know, things to go to and maybe dress up every now and then. But I didn't know this sort of extra, the slightly darker side to it, which was, you're suddenly in the spotlight. Suddenly everyone's got, you know, an opinion and talks about you and everything's under the spotlight. And so, so you end up kind of getting into this mad world of self-consciousness and low self-esteem and all those things. And not just that, but you have to go on stage every night. And you have to kind of keep yourself together mentally and physically to deal with touring and deal with just how physically exhausting it can be, as many jobs can be, which is why I made sure that I spoke to so many people when I wrote this book, because I didn't want it to be just about, like, a singer talking about how grueling tour is. It's also, you know, I came from a very different background to, you know, to the world I'm in today. And so, I talk about that. I talk about that I was a really asthmatic kid. I couldn't do any exercise when I was young. I could barely sing because I was so asthmatic. Mm. So I talk about how I got myself out of that and how I changed my mindset so that even when things are thrown at us every day, which they are more than ever, it seems, at the moment after this mad pandemic, it's really just having the tools to be able to deal with that stuff rather than thinking, oh, I can just get rid of things. You know, we're always going to have these things thrown, but it's just having, like, a toolkit to deal with them, I suppose.
Yeah. And it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, we often write our own stories. Most of us do anyhow. But when you sort of encounter or wander almost into a position like the world which you eventually inhabited, other people take over the writing of your story, and that's where it all begins to go wrong.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, I never intended this book to be like a autobiography. I always think maybe I'll write one of those one day, but maybe not quite yet. God, I've got some stories. But this was really just, like you said, it's like a it's telling my story, but it's also, you can kind of stick through it and you can read different chapters. You don't have to read the whole thing like a novel. It's more just like a, you know, dip in and out kind of book for just things that I've learned along the way and things that I really think will be helpful to people who don't find things like, I don't know, 28-day diets and taking specific things out of your diet and only doing like a run every day or whatever. It's just really about flexibility and also, yeah, a bit of my own story, which I thought was important, and probably things that people don't know about me. So it's quite an interesting read.
Thanks so much, Ellie. Well done on the book, and lovely to hear from you as a new mum, everyone. My little baby.
Oh, thanks, guys. Thank you for having me.
Where is he now, by the way, little Arthur?
Oh, Arthur. Oh, he's asleep.
This
is his little nap time.
All right. Okay, great. Okay, fitter, calmer, stronger. It's Ellie Goulding, A Mindful Approach to Exercise and Nutrition. All right, out now. People are buying it as we speak.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive and June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive and June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
We We've heard from three tip-top guests already, but still to come, Stereophonics frontman Kelly Jones discussing the band's 12th studio album, Ooch Yar, and the accompanying 2022 UK tour, plus a massive Christmas party at the Cardiff Principality Stadium on December the 18th this year. The always brilliant Amanda Abington telling us about starring in the forensic new Sky Original drama, Wolf. It's a comedy drama, so it's a dramedy. Political funny man Matt Ford gets us laughing at latex with the return of Spitting Image on BritBox. And the wonderful Daisy Haggard chats her brilliant second series of Back to Life, which is available in full on BBC iPlayer now. So let's get right back to the action. Dapper Dave, who's next?
He's got the voice of an angel that's gargled whiskey, musical talent coursing through his veins, and he may or may not be here with some news. From the Stereophonics, please welcome someone that may or may not have new music on a tour. It may or may not be Kelly Jones!
Morning, Kelly!
Morning, how are you?
Very well, how are you on this beautiful day?
Very good, thanks. Thanks for having us on.
Oh, well, you're very welcome. So, sunshine in the sky and sunbeams of radiance now coming out of the radio for all Stereophonics fans because, Kelly, what's going down, my friend?
Well, we've got a new album coming out in March, and we've got a new arena tour going to be happening in March. And we've also got a massive sort of end-of-year celebration for all the Welsh people down in Cardiff to do the Millennium Stadium in December the 18th as well, so we've got a bunch of good stuff coming up.
Okay, I love the fact you're so understated about it all. I'm going to do it again for you. Okay, so Stereophonics have a brand new album on the way! Not only that, but they have a brand new stadium tour to announce! And they have an end-of-year homecoming gig for 70,000-plus fans at the Principality Stadium! There you go.
Yeah, that was better, yeah.
So that's what we're talking about. I mean, that's not a bad agenda, is it?
Yeah, it's been a long time coming, actually. So we've been,
it's been a long time coming.
So it's a bit of a shock to the system, but I'm very much looking forward to getting back out there and playing some shows and people hearing some new music. It's a very, very uplifting album. You know, it's a very kind of rock and roll record. So it's perfect for these times, I think.
Now, I've heard a bit of it because I was sent a teaser and a taster over the weekend with one of those special codes, you know, that you have to get your head around.
Did you manage to get in it?
Yeah, just about, which is a minor miracle where I'm concerned. It says here that tickets for the tour go on sale on Friday the 10th of September at 9 o'clock at stereophonics.com. So that's this Friday. Is that the same for the homecoming gig?
I believe so, yeah. I think I think they announced all the shows today and all the tickets start for sale on Friday, yeah.
Okay, are there pre-sales? Can we book ahead, or do you know about that or not?
I don't know, actually. I'm not sure if that's what today's all about, but I know that people can get them on Friday. I was on my way in the car this morning to do some of the stuff, and people were like texting me bits. It's like, maybe we should have put a call in last night to give me more information.
No, but it's more fun like this. It's really more fun like this.
Yeah. All I know is that I finished the record, and I'm happy with the record, and I'm excited for people to hear the new music, and there'll be lots of concerts for people to come and see it live.
Yeah, I mean, that's the sort of overarching framing, isn't it?
Yeah.
So the homecoming gig, what's the date again for that?
We're going to be playing December the 18th in the Millennium Stadium, and I phoned up my good friend, Mr. Tom Jones, and he's going to do it with us.
And not only Tom, you have some other
guests. And we also have Catfish and the Bottlemen.
Yowza!
So it's a fantastic day for the Welsh people who have been locked up, and anybody else who wants to come down, actually. It doesn't have to be just the Welsh people, you know, but Enter the Dragon, we will be there.
On the 18th of December? I mean, that's...
Yeah.
What day is that, do you know?
It's a Saturday night.
Oh, come on!
Yeah, it's a whole Saturday, so it'll be the last, I think people break up for work on the Friday for the Christmas break, and that'll be the first day, yeah.
Oh, I'd love to come to that.
So come down. Yeah, it'd be great.
Oh my goodness me! What a great way to welcome in a Christmas that we how much do we all want and need this Christmas to be maybe the most special of our lifetime?
Well, exactly. I mean, the main reason we wanted to do the show was, you know, we've all got family members, we've all got a story, or people who've lost people or whatever, and there hasn't been anything to really celebrate for quite a long time now. So we couldn't think of anything more. We haven't played the stadium since, I think, 2003 was the last time.
Really?
And obviously, you know, I went to watch all the European football matches around Tom's house, so we would watch all the games together, and I was watching him more than the football, actually shouting at the television. So that was quite a fun afternoon. So I thought, what better for everybody to come and see these shows with seeing Tom. I don't think he's ever played the stadium apart from singing the national anthem on the centre spot, you know, so it'd be great for him too.
Did you say you went round Tom's house to watch all the footy matches?
Yeah.
What's that like?
It was amazing. Yeah, I went round with a six-pack.
Right.
And we had some cans, and we watched the match, and his man, Ben, made us a tray of snacks and nibbles, and I watched that with Tom. And then at the end of the night, he was showing me all the footage of him playing with Jerry Lewis and Little Richard and Elvis and stuff. It was incredible.
Of course it was.
Oh. Yeah, it was a good day.
And now, you know, we've all shouted at the telly, but what's it like when Tom Jones shouts at the telly?
It's really funny watching Tom Jones shouting at the telly, because I was like, how am I here? This 80-year-old legend is sitting next to me, but I'm watching him shouting at the telly. I felt like he's a little boy, really. It was amazing.
And his last album went to number one, didn't it?
It did. Yeah, he did brilliantly, yeah. Yeah, it's a really good record, yeah.
It was his life story with his, you know, in his own words. It was amazing. Yeah. What a fantastic album. So obviously you're going to top the bill because it's your gig, but that could go either way on the night with Tom Jones, couldn't it?
Well, we'd probably have him on at the end, you know.
Why wouldn't you?
To do Mama Told Me Not To Come. Because the last number one he had was the number one he had with us 20 years ago. Yeah, no, it's going to be a good night. It's going to be fantastic. And I love Catfish and the Bottlemen as well. They're great.
Yeah, no,
band,
they're amazing. They're an amazing band. You know, multi-award
winning. They've got band live as well.
Yeah, they're fantastic. And so different, you know, it's, you know, so sort of unpredictable. What's great about a night like you've just described? It's not happened yet, but one can imagine, you know, it's a bit like the cricket today. It can't fail not to be brilliant. I mean, you know, you always need a bit of lady luck alongside you.
Well, that's the amazing thing when you do gigs in Cardiff, because that's the only stadium, really, that actually is centred in the middle of the city, you know. So the atmosphere in the city when there's a concert on or there's a game on is incredible down there. So, I mean, I really can't wait to do it. Like I said, we played Cardiff Football Stadium a few times in the last few years, but we haven't done the Millennium for a long time. So,
well, if you want to come on for a warm-up on the radio, you know where we are, Friday's Live Music.
Absolutely.
We would love to have you on, especially if you have some more 30 dates to drop on us. We'd love to hear about that.
Thank you very much. Thank you, Chris.
Kelly, lots of love to you and yours and the band and everyone involved with the Stereophonics.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
If you want a sensitive topic that shouldn't be funny, made funny, then look no further than our next guest. Series 2 of her brilliant show, Back to Life, continues next Tuesday on BBC One. So back, because Back to Life is back. Back up the truck. She's back. It's Daisy Haggard.
Morning, Daisy.
Hi.
Hiya. You all right?
Yeah, I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. What's going on with the builders? What are they up to?
Oh, we've just got a bit of a kitchen situation. It's all right.
Is it a refit? Is it a walls coming down? The walls come tumbling down?
No, we just had to rewire. It's all right, don't worry. But there'll be no banging for the next hour.
Well, I don't mind if there is, to be honest. It's all part and parcel. You know, you're in real life, you're talking about Back to Life. So, Daisy, I made the carnal error. No, cardinal. Cardinal. Sorry. Cardinal error of going to episode 1 of season 2 yesterday because I didn't see season 1 and trying to play catch up. And I now realise from what my colleagues have said, I should have just bitten the bullet and gone back to binge
on. You should.
It's all there
for
you. I know. It's all there for us. So for people who don't know, like I didn't until yesterday, just can you give us the elevator pitch of what Back to Life is, please?
Back to Life is about a lovely woman, a woman in her mid-30s returning home from what we realise is an 18-year prison sentence. And she's returning to the small town where this terrible thing happened many years ago and moving back in with her parents and trying to rebuild and start a life in a town where everybody hates her. And it shouldn't be funny, but sometimes it is.
And again, you've gone for an extreme departure or reason for departure from normal life. So what came to you first? The curiosity of what would it be like to be away from civilization for 10 to 20 years, you know, a decade and a half or almost two, or somebody being in prison and that happening anyway?
It was a mixture of things. I was really sort of obsessed with how we vilify women who do something wrong. You know, how we, I think as a society, we perceive women when they've committed a crime compared to men. And so that's always something that I've been like, oh, isn't that interesting how that's portrayed in the media when it's a woman compared to a man? And so that's always something that's really interested me. And then just really bluntly, I had to move back home with my parents who were driving me completely crazy and telling me how to load the dishwasher. And it was at that moment that this idea was born. So it was a combination of all those things. And also, you know, I love things that have a big heart about new beginnings. And there was something about the messy combination that just excited me. And so I had a go at writing it.
Well, it's hitting all the right buttons. BAFTA nominated, 5-star reviews from such luminaries as Guardian TV critics, etc. And around the world, Trudy in Norwich says, please tell Daisy Haggard that she's an absolute genius. Back to Life is one of the best things I've ever seen on the telly, ever again. Oh. I keep annoying everyone I know by telling them they need to watch it, then chasing them up to make sure they have. Also, I'm seriously considering buying a hair crimper. We should really be playing Toyer after this, I suppose. Lots of crimping going on because, it, you know, not only has she lost a decade and or two, she's lost a whole sort of vibe. She's lost a whole whole sort of nostalgic reference, hasn't she?
Yeah, totally. Well, she comes back into her sort of basically her teenage bedroom in, yep. in the first season. They're both available on iPlayer, so it's easily catch-upable for anyone who hasn't seen it. Yep. But she returns back to her childhood bedroom, really, with posters of her old idols, most of who are dead, and you know, all her old things, like her, you know, cyber pet, her hair crimper, all those things. And she is trying to start life, but in her late 30s. So the second season opens with a full head of crimped hair.
Right, so here we go. The Telegraph, 5 stars. An out-and-out triumph. This is for the second season. The Guardian, second season. Daisy Haggard's comedy is near-perfect TV, a pure and painful delight which can move you from tears to laughter within a single line. And I News, full of chuckles, but not shying away from the darkness at its centre. And as in all the best TV shows, I think, you know, featuring real-life situations or fictionalised, you know, slash real-life situations, everyone is vulnerable.
Yeah, I think that what we love about, what you know, about writing the show is allowing everyone to be really human. So even, you know, in this second season, we have Adrian Edmondson coming back as the father of the girl who died in the first season. And he's a real threat to Miri. And it's a real sort of thriller element to this this one. But he's a human, you know, he's grieving. He's a person. He's a, you know, he plays the part beautifully. And I think that, it's allowing everyone to have vulnerability and be flawed, because that's what kind of what makes people interesting, isn't it?
Yeah, and if you're not vulnerable, you haven't been born yet. I mean, it's as simple as that.
No, exactly. Miri is this sort of eternal optimism and very vulnerable. Optimist and very vulnerable. So she's kind of like this, at the centre of it, we've got this person who did something absolutely awful, but she's so full of hope that you end up kind of backing her, you know.
Right, you mentioned Aid Edmondson there. There's an interesting story as to how come he's in the second season.
Yeah, he wrote me a sort of tweet thing saying how much he loved the show. And it was really well timed because me and Laura were writing the next season, and then we started to, he put himself in our heads. And the next thing he knew, he was being offered the part of the bad guy.
Yeah, and he loved it.
He did. He was great. He was so much fun. I was very starstruck. And Mira Sayal as well in the season. I was super starstruck.
It's funny though, isn't it? I mean, because to us lot, you know, you're on the same level, but I completely get the sort of fangirl vibe that you're getting.
Silly.
It is amazing. Well, congratulations to you. Well done. And please feel free to come and grace our airwaves with your presence if you want to talk about anything else you're up to.
Oh, thank you so much. Lots of love to you all.
Okay, you're awesome. The most important bit of this whole conversation is to tell you where you can see Back to Life. Back to Life Series 2 continues with Episode 3, Tuesday, 14th of September, 10:35 BBC One, but all 6 episodes on demand via the BBC iPlayer, which is where everybody I know went to watch it, and via Sky Q, of course, as well as the whole of Series 1. Daisy Haggard smashing it on the telly.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
She's an expert at picking quality shows to star in, and once again she's hit the bullseye. The brand new Sky original Wolf is available in full on Sky Max from today, and quite frankly we can't keep the wolf from the door any longer, so it's time to welcome the brilliant Amanda Abington.
All right, Mans.
All right, Chris.
How's it going?
All right, how you doing?
See, here's what I heard.
What?
Here's what I heard.
Go on.
I heard that when they're thinking about commissioning a TV show now, a blockbuster TV show, what they do is they pretend they've commissioned it and then they ask you to be in it. And if you say yes, then they commission it because you're so good at picking hits.
That's pretty much the gist. Yeah. Yeah. I think so. I don't know.
How do you do it?
I go for character-driven stuff. So anything that's like driven by people and people's relationships, that's what I find interesting. And I think people watching want to invest in characters. So whenever I read a script, if it's something that drives me and makes me want to turn the page, then I'm assuming that that will translate onto screen or stage, you know.
So. Just let's stick with that a moment or two. We'll explode what Wolf is in a moment. So stick with us, everybody. But I just want to know where you go for that in your house. Do you have a script chair? Do you have a regime? Do you have a ritual for a brand new script? Do you sit down and do? Because I know that Richard E. Grant, the first thing he does, because I've seen him do it, is he smells the script.
Does he?
He gets a cup of tea. He sits in his favourite chair and he starts to smell the script.
Then he
flicks through the page and he smells it. And then he starts. Do you have a go-to place for this
very
process?
Hannibal Lecter, isn't it? That I like that.
If you like, yeah.
I have a little Italian chair.
And it really is your script chair.
It is my script chair. I sit there and read it.
So how many would you get a week, for example?
Oh, I don't know. I mean, I get sent a few things. Not that many. And I still audition. You know, I still like to audition because it's always important to kind of go in the room and vie for a job as opposed to just get given it.
Right.
I think it's important to keep that competition going.
Element going.
But it's nice when I've got to read a script now. Usually within like the first sort of 20 pages, you kind of know if it's a dud or not, or if it's good, you know.
Yeah, they're crafty, those screenwriters, aren't they? Because what they do is they make the first few pages fantastic for enticing a commissioning bid, B getting the right actors, and then those pages may change unrecognisably, come to the final draft
all the time. You get different colours coming through, all the time, yeah.
And sometimes the colours can pertain to who's written them, and that's how they figure out what they get paid.
Exactly, yeah. It's all corrupt.
No, it's not. It's nice.
No,
corrupt.
It's not.
What are you talking about?
I was joking. It's not. It's absolutely beautiful and above board.
Yes, let's go with that, shall we? Right, Wolf, I've seen it.
Have you?
How do we explain it? Because I didn't know I was allowed to laugh.
Yeah, I know, you're totally allowed to laugh.
Well, nobody told me this.
I know, let me just say that for everybody listening, you are allowed to laugh.
Out loud.
Yes, totally, yeah. It's a very, very gallows humour.
Right. Who's Wolf with an E? Sky Max, this is on Sky Max from today. All episodes available, a brand new thing.
It's about a guy called Wolf Kinte who runs a forensic laboratory, a training forensic laboratory. So it's a working one and a training one, and he has a group of people that work underneath him, me being one of them. And we investigate cases, and he's bipolar, so he's spiralling, and we have to kind of hold the safety net for him, but all under the guise of a very, very kind of very dark humour.
Yeah, well, you say you're part of the gang. You're the mother hen, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm his wingman kind
so,
of thing.
So what do you know about CSI now?
Everything you need to know, you can come to me. Anything you need to know about how to get rid of anything or test for anything, I'm your man.
Or woman.
Or woman, yeah. I'm not at all, by the way. It's so complicated.
I was talking to the female head, not because there's a male and a female, but the current head of CSI in the UK is a female. And I was talking to her last week because her daughter went to the same kids club, holiday kids club, as my son. And we went to pick them up. And she says, oh, I know what you do. I says, well, what do you do? She said, I'm the head of CSI. I said, where for? You know, thinking like Islington North. You went, the UK. I went,
oh my God.
All right. Okay. Let's, now it's time for a conversation.
Yeah.
So she, I don't know whether she would be you or not.
I'd be slightly lower down the
But we talked about TV shows straight away.
Okay.
And she says, I said, how many times you had this conversation? About 1,000. She said, can I have it again? She said, yeah. I said, how accurate? She said, well, you know, that we had a chat about that shit. But the thing is, They're fans of various shows, not all of them, but various shows, big fans of the shows. But they are a little concerned that too many things are being given away to the baddies via telly.
Yeah, didn't think of that. What
kind of things did you learn?
We went to an actual laboratory and a forensic place, and we were talking to actual kind of forensic officers, and they told us in no uncertain terms how to get rid of bodies. And I remember me and Adam Long, who's in the show, we both looked at each other and went, should they be telling us this? Because this is like quite relevant information that if I was homicidal maniac, I could learn a lot from this and probably get away with it.
In my experience, you're not.
No, thankfully, no, not yet.
In my experience.
Yeah, yeah. But that's
because
I like you, though, so that's probably why.
Well, thank heaven. The kitchen in the opening scenes, the house with the amazing kitchen. Mm. You know, what's that about? It's not fair, is it? Because you watch TV, you do great shows, you know, whether it's yours, this one you're on, other shows you've been on at the moment, or you've got your Big Little Lies and Nicole Kidman's and your Tranquillums. Yeah. They've always got amazing houses. advertising that, that everybody just wants. Well, where do we buy that then?
I know.
Who sources these?
We have a locations manager who just goes around looking with the director and the producer and the cameraman. And before we start shooting, they'll go and secure every single location that's needed in the show. But because of COVID, things kept falling, you know, kept slipping away. Yep. So we were constantly kind of juggling different locations and having to change.
Which is the dwelling you've worked in as an actress on a movie or a TV series that you've wanted to live in most?
There was a fantastic... I did a thing called The Crooked House, which was an Agatha Christie film, and there was a fantastic house up in the north of England, and it was perfect. It was just like this beautiful...
Was it real?
Yeah.
They didn't just build it for the show?
No.
Because that does happen sometimes, doesn't it?
Yeah, we built it. Yeah. I was there with my hammer and nails.
Yes. I'd like to thank no one, just myself,
just
actually.
Just myself. I did all of it. But they built our CSI laboratory from scratch in a barn. And we walked in and it was like something out of Marvel. We were like, this is incredible.
Those pesky set designers.
And then they just like rip it all down at the end.
I know.
It's crazy.
Have you seen the film Beaches?
Yes.
That house on the beach there.
Ugh.
Doesn't exist.
Doesn't it?
Well, they just built it for the films.
Oh, no.
Yeah, they did. Of course they did. You know. You've been in this business for long enough.
That's incredible. I see. I want that afterwards.
Have you watched the whole of Wolf? All six episodes?
Yes. I had to because of I have to talk about it and I have to know.
I know, but sometimes you can watch bits and bobs.
Yeah. No. No. I do.
And are you happy with your choice of script?
Yes, I really am. I think it's a really lovely, interesting, dark, funny show, and I think it's something that's not been really seen on television for a while, if ever.
Also, there's a code, there's a writer's code, because the creator of this is Paul Abbott, you know, just the Shameless and just the No Offence, amongst many of his wonderful creations. But there's a writer's code, and I don't know if you know about the writer's code.
Is
so
there?
Well, it's only... There's a specific code.
Right.
And if you think you've got a great movie on your hands or you've got a great TV show on your hands, what you do is you have to put a Volvo Estate in the opening scene. And the second I saw the Volvo Estate, I thought, it's going to be great. It's going to be great. All the greatest movies in the world have a Volvo 240 DL Estate in them. Now, the one in yours isn't, but it's the more modern but still quite old version of that.
I love a Volvo.
And I thought, hang on a minute, Wolf drives a Volvo Estate. It's a hit.
It's going to be a hit.
That's what it is.
The series beckons.
You know,
clearly.
So will Abington be in it? Yes, okay, commission it. And put a stick of Volvo Estate in the opening scenes. And basically, we're done, we're dusted.
It's a win-win situation.
Bring on the BAFTAs, baby!
Obviously.
Okay.
Obviously.
All right, Amanda, anything else you want to say before you go? It's great to have you here.
It's so nice to
see
you.
It's great to have you here.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
He's once again going face to slightly grotesque face with some of the most recognisable physogs in the world. Series 2 of Spitting Image is available to stream on BritBox from Saturday, and here to tell us if he trumps or not is the delightful Matt Ford.
All right, Matt.
Hello.
Oh, it's so good to see you.
It's so good to see you too.
You and Vass have already had the football chat. Is that done and dusted now?
I've been abused for being a Forest fan, yeah. That's what you mean.
You said, hi, Matt, what's going down? So it was pretty much an open goal.
But ouchy,
Nottingham Forest,
a little bit ouchy.
Very little bit.
Friend of the show.
I know.
Maybe not for much longer if you beat him, disabuse him like that when he walks in. You
said what's going on,
and then the Vass is speaking from opposite ends of the championship. You know, you're not in the team, Vass. You don't score the goals. You're just like a, you know,
in fact,
a fair weather fan.
Where we've got our season tickets this season, we're behind a pillar, so I can't even see who's scoring the goals.
It was a very snooty way to talk to me.
It was very snooty.
I felt very judged coming in,
Matt,
here.
I don't know what's going on.
It was a microaggression.
Yeah.
I've been triggered.
It's a macroaggression. So what's going on with Nottingham Forest? What are the issues? If they're listening now, what do they need to do from a lifelong fan?
Score goals and win games. It really is as simple as that, Chris. But we haven't won a single game all season in the league.
All right. Because Ronaldo's taken it. He's gone to United. Hasn't he? That's a shame.
Yeah, and Messi doesn't want to come. I mean, you know, these stars don't know their
ball. What is wrong with these people?
Why do they want to live in Nottingham and play second division football at the wrong end of the table?
Let's talk about Spitting Image.
Yes.
Spitting Image is back on BritBox for its second season. All right, season one went gangbusters. Spitting Image is one-off US election special, gained ITV's highest Saturday night ratings at that time in 4 years for 4.4 million views. Well done, mate. That's
not
awesome.
Bad. Well, I can't take all the credit, but as I'm the only member of staff here, I'm happy to take
all
the credit.
Yeah, of course you can. You can take all the credit.
That was all down to me, yeah.
So, existing puppets, Joe Biden, Boris Johnson, Cristiano Ronaldo!
Yeah, Ronaldo's in there.
Oh, come on.
We've also got a fat Ronaldo.
Right.
I think we built him for one sketch last year, which was What If Ronaldo's Life Went to Hell, and he ended up running a pub in Stoke. And
who does Ronaldo?
I think Luke Kempner does him, or Lewis Capaldi. Not Lewis Capaldi. McLeod! God, that's so bad of me! But now, because we built a Fat Ronaldo puppet for one sketch, everyone's like, we need to use the Fat Ronaldo puppet more.
Yeah.
So
well, you
Fat
can Ronaldo now, because he's back in the hood, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly, yeah. So we've got Fat Ronaldo. I'm doing Phil Foden, which is a real treat, because I'm a massive fan of Phil Foden
as a
footballer.
Yeah, I love Phil Foden as well. I wish he'd got more game time in the Euros.
Oh, I couldn't believe it. He was the player I was most excited about. I kept telling my girlfriend, Phil Foden's the one to watch.
Give us your Phil Foden, come on.
You know, I just have to play, Chris. You know, it's quite high-pitched like that, isn't it? You know, that's what's mad about so many of the footballers. You see them on the pitch, and they're like lions, like, men, and you're like, God, yeah. And then you hear them afterwards, that like, I thought I played all right, you know, but, you know, if Gareth wants me to play, I play more often, thanks, Chris, but if I don't, I'm fine with it. You're like, they don't sound anything like the way they look, these
fellas.
So true. They're all so softly spoken.
I know, but also footballers are so much more petite than they used to be.
They are physically amazing.
Yeah, but they're not skinny because they're really sort of muscular. But there's no fat on them at
they're
all.
They're like racehorses.
They are.
And you know what? You know
they
when you
like
see them, you know when you say, "Oh, how can people all attract to these footballers?" What's amazing
they're
about
beautiful.
Them is
they're beautiful.
They're beautiful. And it's
beautiful.
The best. It's the best they will ever look.
Yeah.
It's for the body they have. That is the best it will ever look. Their skin is incredible.
Yeah.
They're physically fit. Their diets are amazing.
But also,
they look at their eyes, man.
I've often thought about this because obviously, and a lot of them booze a lot less, if at all, than used to be the case. You know, and football was big for that, cricket was big for that, and often, you know, we're talking about sports people in the 80s. You know, you didn't necessarily have to be the best sort of cricketer in England to get an England team. You had to be the best cricketer who could play with a hangover. And it's true.
It's true.
Because
yeah.
Darren Goff said, you know, for what's Darren's famous quote about?
The England cricket team aren't a cricket team with a drinking problem. They're a drinking team with a cricket problem.
And that's sort of what it was like. You remember at Arsenal, and, you know, this has been well documented in various biographies, very interesting biographies, but it's not the case anymore. And as people get healthier, they get more beautiful. You know, and if you think about Olympic athletes, especially track athletes, they have a great symmetry about their face because their body and their biochemistry is in such balance that they have a symmetry to their face which is very aesthetically pleasing to the eye.
And they're not waking up on the settee covered in spaghetti oops and crumbs.
And also, if you wake up on the settee, half your face is mulched anyway for the rest of the day. And it's about balance, isn't it? It's a great advert for health.
Yeah. So, which in turn, obviously, is a great advert for Spitting Image Series 2, which drops on BritBox this Saturday.
Yeah. It was a great moment, wasn't it, when Ronaldo was at the Euros and he moved the one of the headline sponsors' drink bottles out of shot. And Agua came in. And was it the next day you could buy Ronaldo Agua or something?
Yeah.
He wasn't anything to do with it, was he?
And he just didn't want to be pictured in this. Did he do Coke and then somebody else did beer? And then the sponsors all went, hang on a minute.
See, in the old days, you'd have Evian sponsoring something and somebody moving the Evian out of the way and getting a bottle of Carlsberg. Say, no.
That's right, it's gone the other way.
Yeah, exactly. All right, so more puppets. Joe Biden, Boris Johnson, Cristiano Ronaldo, Prince Andrew, Harry Kane, Vladimir Putin, Harry and Meghan. Harry and Meghan. Harry and Meghan, Beyonce, Angela Merkel, Dwayne Johnson, Gareth Southgate, Ed Sheeran, Jurgen Klopp. Who does Jurgen?
Luke Kempner does him very well.
Okay, do you do any voices on the new season?
Yeah, I do.
Or are you just here to PR them now?
I do Boris Johnson, Phil Foden, Alex Salmond, Keir Starmer, Donald Trump. Mm. I had to do Chris Whitty this week and I'd never done one before. I think whoever was doing him must have had a cold or something.
Right.
So they said, oh, can you do Chris Whitty tomorrow? So he's had to watch loads of videos of Chris Whitty. It's one of those things where he's been on telly for like a year. I wouldn't have a clue what he actually sounded like.
That's so true, actually.
So just knock one up. So
that's
hopefully,
so
you know, no one's going to go, that sounds nothing like Chris Whitty.
Right, once again, Spitting Image available to stream from Saturday. Brand new season 2 of the brand new Spitting Image exclusively on BritBox. That was Matt Ford. Big cheer for Matt. Thank you very much indeed.
The best of the Chris Evans Breakfast Show with Sky.
Virgin Radio.
Thank you so much for listening to this, the podcast of the Virgin Radio Breakfast Show. Don't forget you can subscribe and get it every week from wherever you get your podcast, and you will never miss the weekly roundup of all the best bits from our Virgin Radio Breakfast Show with Sky.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.